And so say thank you again to everybody who's read. The talk is open the meeting. I'd like to welcome people that have joined us since we first started. A particular welcome to any visitors and a massive welcome to any newcomers to NA that are with us tonight. We hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. We are a speaker meeting, and I'm going to invite Joe, who's going to introduce our speaker. So, Joe, over to you.
I'm an addict. My name is Jay.
Hello, Jay.
Hi, Jay.
Our speaker tonight, I met at a group that he does service at, and somebody introduced us that has been to this meeting that lives in Clearwater, with in the same town that I lived with in, and we played telephone tag for months. I mean, I think I was introduced to him back in June of last year, if not before that. I'd have to go back and look at my phone. We did hook up. I do go to the meeting he does service at, which meets 5 days a week at 2:30 in the afternoon, UK time. It's called Surrender. And the meeting that I normally go to, is the Friday meeting, because it is a traditions meeting, and everybody knows that I like to listen to the traditions and I like to learn about the traditions. I look forward to hearing him. We've had some conversations, and he's got a little bit of clean time, and we've had some conversations about some stuff, and I look forward to hearing his experience, strength, and hope. Jimmy Tail, would you share with us for 40 to 45 minutes?
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm an addict. My name is Jimmy.
Hi.
Hello, Jimmy.
Hi, Jimmy.
You know, it's always, always amazing when I listen to people introduce me and I go, is he talking about me? Do you really want to hear from me? No matter how long I've been clean, it's just been like I still have those moments of insecurity and self-loathing and stuff. I heard somebody on a meeting this morning say, the favorite saying of everybody, I think, it is what it is. And I always debate that. No, it isn't what it is. If you're eliminating surrender, you're eliminating change. If it is what it is, I think it is what you make of it. You can be. I woke up this morning feeling really miserable, and I could have laid in bed and stayed miserable and let it be. It is what it is. But I decided to get up, take a shower. I took my daughter to work, and I started to experience life. And it changed my perception right away. I wasn't in that I don't want to get up mode, because I was already up. It happened again. Now, Jay had to help me get on here. I don't do computers. Like, if you say push this button, I push the button. There's a guy at my door from Amazon delivering underwear. I get deliveries because all I want to do is get on Zoom platform or BlueJeans or whatever. I just can't do it. So we got to a point where I was getting frustrated. He was helping me. He said, well, click this, click this, click this. And I was getting frustrated. And I was on the verge of it is what it is. But I didn't go there. I said, isn't there an app where you could like take over my computer and show me how to do it? So we went through some changes, and here I am. So if it is what it is, back a half hour ago, you wouldn't be hearing me talk right now. You know, I've never liked technology. I'm getting too old to worry about learning it. Sometimes I feel a little bad that I ask people to do things for me. I mean, I get my daughter. I said, could you send this so I don't screw it up? I send it to the wrong email or the wrong app or whatever it is. But anyway, so we're here. And I come from a sprawling metropolis called Snow Hill, Maryland. It's a little town in the eastern shore of Maryland in the United States. And I moved here from New York City. I got clean in New York City, and I was clean there for 22 years, and then, as my sponsor says, there's only a few things that motivate us, but usually it's finances and romances. So, of course, I don't know technology, but sure enough, I was online, and I met a woman from Snow Hill, Maryland, and I was in love, you know. So I wound up giving my house to the kids in New York City and moving to Maryland. I mean, they're grown, and I love it so much that I stayed here even after we got divorced, you know. Oh, we got married and got divorced, but that's part of a long story. Anyway, I got clean in July of 1988, I moved down in here in 2009. I've been here for like 11 and a half years, almost 12 years. And I love it down here. Just briefly, I don't like talking about everything I did other than 2 minutes. So I started using somewhere between 9 and 12. I'm not one of those guys who say, I remember taking my first drink when I was 8 years. I don't remember what I had for breakfast yesterday. So I'm not going to tell you when I started using. I know it was between 9 and 12, and I used for almost 30 years, and I did everything there was that everybody talks about, from starting at cigarettes, smoking pot, doing pills, doing acid, drinking like crazy, and I did just about everything in the service in Vietnam. Huffing boot black, and kids were doing airplane glue. We were huffing boot black. Anything that could get me out of myself, make me feel different. And it didn't have to be different, like better. It could make me feel a different kind of bad. I was okay with that. I was tired of the same bad. Let me do some kind of drug to feel a different bad. At least it's something new. And I wound up spending 20 of the 30 years I used with a needle in my arm. I shot heroin. My favorite thing to do was speedballs. And I got clean July 15th, 1988, as my sponsor says, BC, before crack. That's probably about the one thing I haven't done. And I'm not concerned about the yets. I'm very, very concerned since I came in with Narcotics Anonymous about doing the agains. I don't want to do heroin again. I don't want to drink bourbon again. I don't want to do acid again. I don't want to do cocaine again. I don't want to live in an abandoned building again. I don't want to sleep in burnt out cars again. There's a whole bunch of agains. We don't even have to get to the yets. We learn in Narcotics Anonymous that we can change and not have to do those things again. So for me, I'm here to tell me that I don't want to do those things again. And I better get my ass in gear and do the things that we do here in this program so we can continually change. I always represent myself as a newcomer. It doesn't matter that in a New York minute I'll have 33 years if I don't use, but I could use. Anything could make me use. I believe the program and my higher power has me in tow, but anything, one bad decision away from using. I did all the things that everybody does. Pretty much our stories aren't different. When I listen to people, some people tweak my story. Some people make me remember my story because I do forget it sometimes. I get the speakers. Jay referenced that I do service at a meeting in the morning. It's not my home group, but they said, you know a lot of people and you have a lot of connections. Could you get speakers for the meeting? And the meeting was only an hour long. And so I'm from already in 19 before 1988. Now I'm up to this year. So I'm going to jump all around if it fits. So I hope you can follow. I'm sure you can. They asked me to get speakers, and I said, well, if we get speakers, an hour is not enough of a meeting. I think we should, you as a group could decide. Maybe we should make it an hour and a half. Give somebody a chance to develop a story. With a topic, we can develop a story, whether it's a tradition or a step or something out of the Living Clean or something like that. But if you're doing experience, strength, and hope, sometimes the story start. Mine doesn't start in the beginning and go to the end. Mine starts in the beginning, jumps to the end, hits back to the middle. But it's a process, just like this program is. So I said, give the people a chance to speak. Give them a minimum of a half hour. Let them talk. And I try to get people who can carry the topics. And he said, well, isn't that judging? I said, absolutely. I know what I need for my recovery. So I'm judging that I need this for my recovery, and I hope it helps you in your recovery. So I get people to speak all over, and I have gotten Jay there before and different people. As of yesterday was the eighth tradition, and I got a friend of mine from New York, and he was the 256th speaker in a row because we get five speakers a week. And it's quite a chore, and I feel very insecure because right now I only have Wednesday and Thursday booked for next week. But I'm confident that with the people I know and the service that I do and how I put effort into it and how committed I am to this program and what people can do to carry this message, that I'm confident that Monday, Tuesday, and Friday are going to be covered, you know? So I do that every day, and it's been going along good. And it's funny because yesterday I couldn't get in the group that I serve. I got in other groups. I tried. I did my computer stuff. I shut off my computer. I did, rebooted the router. I checked my phone. I did, couldn't get on. So I missed the meeting, and I was a little saddened. So anyway, I used for a lot of years. I was on a methadone program. I was on two methadone programs, one on Staten Island, New York, and one in Brooklyn, New York, at the same time. And at that time, they only let 100 milligrams be dealt out. So that wasn't enough. So I joined another program. So I was at that time getting 200 milligrams a day. And that was right up until they caught me. But when they caught me, everybody was afraid of losing their license. And I was a bad guy. And they booted me off of one. And the other one, I forget what it's called, medically detoxed or whatever. They detoxed me 10 milligrams a day. And anybody knows anything about methadone, 100 milligrams gone on Monday, and I'm on 90 from the other program on Tuesday, and then 80 and down. And they said, how did you make out? I said, well, I really didn't get that sick at all, but of course I was shooting heroin and cocaine. So we don't know how to do anything except substitute when we feel sick, whether it's love sick, dope sick, gambling sick, we substitute. So That's the end of anything that has to do with my using drugs, getting into NA story. And I never realized I had a serious problem. I never realized I had any problem. I never looked for a solution to a problem because I think I didn't have one. But I came into Narcotics Anonymous, I assume because I had a problem with sex. I would date numerous women, 6, 8, 10 women at a time, and think it was natural. Didn't know it was part of the disease of addiction. And one woman, you know, guys can understand, I guess women can understand. There's that woman, that one woman. You know that woman, or you know that man. There's that one. Well, everyone I had was the one. This is the one. Well, she was the one, and we were doing lots of cocaine, and we broke up. And the only thing I got out of that was that I didn't have to share anymore. And that's the most I got out of it. And loneliness crept in. And when it crept in, I did the thing that all good junkies do. I called up and said, hey, can we be friends? And obviously and absolutely, I was not looking to be friends with this woman. All it was about sex. And she said, we could talk. My first thoughts are, well, I'll get an 8-ball of cocaine. I'll get a bundle of dope. I said, we'll go to the bar. We'll drink some bourbon. We'll have some fun. We'll go back to the crib and we'll get loaded. And she said, I don't use today. And I said, of course, because I'm arrogant a lot of times. Today I try not to be, but then I was very arrogant. And I said, you don't use what? I can get anything, whatever you don't use, whatever you do use, I can get it. Just make a list. I'm good. She says, no, I don't use drugs today. And you know, if we're not looking for a solution, if we're not, forget surrender, if we're not looking, not even thinking that we have a problem, we're not looking for a solution. So everybody I knew used, didn't know anybody who didn't want to use or didn't use. And this was a new concept to me. And I said, what are you talking about? She said, would you come to a meeting with me tonight? This was seriously my introduction to Narcotics Anonymous. And I said, a meeting? I think I was 39 years old at the time, and I had never heard of a meeting other than the other fellowships meeting because I thought my father was long overdue to go there. But I said, yeah, I'll go to a meeting with you because I'm thinking about having sex. So she said, let's go to Burger King or let's go to McDonald's. I would have went anywhere she wanted to go. I was going because I figured this was my foot in the door. So she took me to a meeting. And she did all the things that we do for newcomers. She introduced me to a guy. She said, this guy, he could help you, and maybe you could get him as a sponsor. I don't even know what the heck a sponsor is. But meanwhile, I'm going, yeah, this guy might be my sponsor. I don't know what she was talking about. She said, get a textbook. So I went and I bought a textbook, and I showed her. And I said, look, I got a textbook. Now, all the time, I'm thinking I'm going to get sex Saturday night. And she said, use it. So I threw it in the back of my car. That's how well I used it. And I said, I think I'll ask Jimmy. His name happened to be Jimmy. I said, I think I'll ask Jimmy to be my sponsor. She goes, good, use him. I said, believe me. And this was in my head. I said, believe me, I'm going to figure out a way to use this guy to get closer to you. I'm going to have this guy eating out of the palm of my hand. I can talk anybody into anything. I'm going to convince him that you should be with me. And it wasn't about, you know, it was about sex. So here I am going to meetings. I went to meetings for 6 months, wasn't using, was sticking a needle in my arm 8 to 10 times a day. And I hadn't done that in 6 months and didn't think about it. The power of what goes on in this program. We don't even know we're getting roped into this program. All we have to do is do the stuff in the beginning. I had a sponsor. I had a textbook. I was sharing at meetings. I noticed that when people we knew would say, hi, this guy Tim would say, hi, I'm Tim, I'm an addict. And I would see her smile. So I would say, hey, I'm Jimmy, I'm an addict. And she would smile. So I would move my chair closer to her. And I said, this is great if I keep doing this stuff. Meanwhile, it's 6 months later and she decides to leave the program. So I told my sponsor, I'm not coming back. And he said, why? I said, because I came here for her. You know that. He said, it had nothing to do with shooting dope every day. I said, no. He said, it had nothing to do with drinking bourbon every day. I said, no. He said, all the pills you do and the pot you smoke and everything you do every day around the clock, all the jobs you do. And he gave me this whole list of things. And I just said, no. He said, this is what everybody says. This just happened to be 6 months that you wanted to stop. I said, exactly. I told mom, I told dad, I told all my friends. Anytime I want to stop, I can stop. This was 6 months I wanted to stop. And he asked me, and it was very significant, he asked me to do him a favor. And I had known the guy for 6 months. He was a pretty stand-up guy. I found out that trying to use him wasn't working because he was a stand-up guy. And he said, please, Jimmy, he says, go home tonight. Don't get high. He said, come back tomorrow. Meet me at the meeting. And he said, if you decide to leave Narcotics Anonymous, he said, I'll give you a hug and I'll be here for you if you decide to come back. And I went home and I sat there and I thought about it. And I thought, I didn't use for 6 months. I didn't use for 6 months. Holy shit, I didn't use for 6 months. What the hell happened? What did Narcotics Anonymous do to me? I thought that I was being made less of a person. Like it took all my fun away. Like what's going on? So I went back the next day. And the next day, he said, what are you going to do? You're going to go or you're going to stay? I said, I'm going to stay. And he said, why? I said, I'm going to be honest. I'm so confused. I don't know why. But right now, I've been here for 6 months and I stayed. And I started applying the program. I started writing the steps more intensely and more passionately. I started doing service at 6 months. I got an H&I come in. All I am, here I am as a guy who doesn't want to be clean or doesn't know if he wants to be clean. Now I'm clean 6 months. Now I'm doing H&I. I'm chairing meetings. I'm speaking and I'm doing this and I'm doing that. All of a sudden, I'm an NA guy. How the heck did that happen? The power of my higher power has shown me the power of this program that took me in when it went to a place I didn't want to be and gave me the life that I didn't know I wanted to have. And so from then on, I've done service ever since I had 6 months clean. And I've done regional service. I've done area service. I always do group service. Matter of fact, I just did area service the other night. I'm the guy in area service that everybody loves to hate. I might tell you about that in a little bit here. But so I go to meetings. I've been retired since 2006. I got two kinds of cancer, and I wanted to keep working. And they said, these doctors that were on the board said, they looked at me and they said, can you do your job? And I said, yeah, I'm pretty sure I can do my job. And they looked at me and said, we're going to ask you this again. Look at us. So I looked at them and they were saying, can you do your job, as they were shaking their heads side to side. So I said, oh, I get it. No, I can't do my job. So they said, okay, you're officially retired. So I retired in 2006. I worked for the Department of Environmental Protection in New York City. And so now I'm retired. I have a great life. Because of Narcotics Anonymous, I got clean in 88. So in 2006, I was able to retire on a disability pension. I got Social Security disability. I got this, I got that. I don't even think it is sometimes, but I don't have to work to pay my bills or go on vacation or take care of my kids, you know? A lot of people will say their drug of choice is more. Well, my drug of choice is never enough. Whatever it is, it's never enough. I was married 6 times, and I'm divorced 6 times. I have 6 children. They're all grown now. My one 17-year-old daughter is living with me in Maryland. My other kids live in New York, and she's going off to college in September. I don't know how I feel about that, but that's what happens in life. Even your children move on. And I think the biggest thing that ever happened to me in recovery, which would fight my disease, like I said, so I was married 6 times. You know what it's like? Normally I tell the story, well, I wanted the White House, the house and a white picket fence, so I got married, and then I got divorced, and then I got married, and then I got divorced, and then I got married, and then I got divorced. I still believe in marriage. I'm still looking for number 7. Is it the reality of who I am, or is it my disease? I don't know, but my sponsor, I love my sponsor. The man takes me to places in my recovery that I never thought would ever happen. I never thought that life could be so good inside of me. I got all the outside stuff. I had 5 motorcycles. I sold 2. So I got 3 motorcycles. I got a brand new pickup truck. I got a 35-foot camper. I got a gigantic house. I got stuff. But I never knew that I could be so happy inside myself. And my sponsor shows me how good life really is. And that all of this outside stuff, I don't need it to be happy. I mean, it's good to have. Don't get me wrong. I like jumping on a bike and going for a 2-hour ride. I like having people over to the house. And sure, I got 4 bedrooms. And sure, come on over and stay. Kind of a little tough now. This has been a tough year. But this year has been a good learning year for me. I've been through the steps 9, well, not completely 9 times, but I'm on my 9th, 11th step. So I'm going to go to the place where my 9th, 4th step was, because it was a big, one of the big spiritual awakenings for me. You know, we talk about spiritual awakenings in the 12th step, and everybody's got their idea of what the spiritual awakening is. Like, I have my thoughts on what it is, and it keeps changing, you know, and what the message is. I mean, we talk about the message, and we talk about stop using, lose the desire, and find a new way to live. And okay, there's a great message. It's so great, so simple. But is that the message? Is that the only message? Is that the full message? Because I'm an addict. I got, my mind is going all the time. So 2019, the rest is just rhetoric. I could talk hours about my years in recovery and the meetings we did and the dances we did and the service at picnics and barbecues, and that was many years. But there was a big, in 2019, in August, I did my ninth fourth step. And in the middle of it, close to the end, and I spent a lot of time, just for instance, my ninth seventh step, I spent 42 or 43 hours discussing it with my sponsor. And this is after, at that point, it was like 31 years clean at that time. I put a lot of time in. He gives me a lot of time. We do a lot of discussing. And so I'm in my ninth fourth step. And towards the end, he goes, Jimmy, can I say something to you? And I said, of course, Ronnie. Of course you can say something. You can say anything to me. You're my man. I've had seven sponsors, but you're the man now. He said, I hope you don't get offended. And instantly I got offended because I'm an addict. I instantly got offended. How dare you think that you could say something to offend me? I'm in such a great place. But I said, go ahead, Ron. Say what you got to say. He said, you've done eight previous fourth steps, and it sounds like you've never done a fourth step before. And I started to cry. And he said, are you okay? I said, I'm fabulous. He said, why are you crying? I said, because knowing that it sounds like I've never done a fourth step before means I'm still learning. I'm still open. I've gotten to a place where I told you stuff that I've never told other people and didn't even know I hadn't told them. That each year I do things and I open up more and more. That my willingness gets stronger. My commitment gets stronger. My open-mindedness gets better. My honesty with myself and with everybody else gets more passionate and more powerful. And I felt so great after that fourth step. And that was in July of 2019. And I was thrilled and my program was pumped up and I was feeling good about everything. And I normally make 13 to 17 meetings a week because I'm retired. I still have plenty of time to play. My kids are grown. I only got my one 17-year-old. So I got time to play all day. And then in September of 2019, my oldest son, Jesse, passed away. And it damn near killed me. And when we talk about reservations in the first step, well, the last time I told the story, I didn't cry. I guess that comes and goes like everything else. It talks about getting rid of our reservations. And I never agreed with that. There's a lot of stuff I don't agree with. I follow the program as close to the literature as I can. But I said, without knowing how I would feel, I don't know if I'll use if one of my children died. And I had six kids. And now it was put, and I don't like to use the word test. I don't like when people use the word test, but it was put to my front. It was put to my life. It was here in front of me. What am I going to do with this? My son Jesse had a heart attack. He passed away. And I called my sponsor. What do we do? I said, Ronnie, what do I do? He said, Jimmy, did you go to a meeting? I said, yeah. He said, you call me? I said, yeah, I'm talking to you. He said, you calling your friends? I said, yeah. He said, so why are you asking me, what do we do? What do I do? You know what to do. This is what the program says. Connect with people so when the storm comes, it's like going out knowing there's going to be a storm and not bringing an umbrella or a raincoat. Practice this program. And I practiced it so hard and I wrote the steps so many times and I connected with people that I felt the pain. And as it talks about in the literature, I actually learned how to survive my emotions. I was emotionally a wreck. And here I was with a son that I had a horrible relationship for the last 5 years, and I still have guilt over this. I don't know how I'm going to deal with this, and he's working with me. When my son passed away, I hadn't talked to him for 5 years. We hated each other. And the last year of his life, I was trying to repair that relationship. And I would talk to his wife. And I would say, Jen, I said, I really think we need to repair this. She said, he loves you, but he knows that he can't talk to you because you guys just are like oil and water. You are on fire when you talk to each other. And I said, I know, but I want to repair this. I don't know if we can, but I want to try. And then he died. So now I feel guilty. Now my sponsor's helping me work on guilt. We're doing step work. We're doing the things that we do in this program to get through, you know? So there's not an illusion that it can't be fixed, or there's not an illusion that I need to use because of it. But what happened is it created another reservation. I got five more kids. Could I withstand the pressure of having a second one pass away? I'm always in fear of one of my other children passing away. I truly believe, I have faith that I can get through it because of you people, because you show me how to do this. Because when, even if you don't know me and I call you, you will sit and listen. So that happened in, that was in September of 2019. And I got through that fall. It was miserable holidays. Thanksgiving was miserable. My kids tried to put on an act that everything was okay, and I know they missed their brother, and I guess they did a good job. I was mostly silent, and I did a lot of step work. I did a lot of prayer. I did a lot of meditation. I mean, I do it normally every day, but now I'm doing it even more because I, you know, never have enough. There's never enough meetings. There's never enough prayer. There's never enough meditation. There's never enough connection. Like I said, I got 256 speakers in a row, connections that I get from other people. I started out with mine, and I connect, and I connect. And I do service, and I do the things we do. And then COVID hit, and everybody's in an uproar, and the world is split. Cities are split, Narcotics Anonymous is split, and a lot of people are concerned where it's going to go, and a lot of people are not concerned where it's going to go. Last week I did 17 meetings. I'm retired. I spend a lot of time since the beginning of last year being with myself and talking to certain people. I'm not overly cautious, but I'm cautious enough, or let's put it this way. It's 50-50. Either I'm going to live or I'm going to die. So I will take precautions because I really am not in a mood to die, at least not today. You know, I guess I'll be okay with dying somewhere along the road here, but today I'm just not in a mood. I hope it's nice tomorrow and I can ride my motorcycle. So in September of this past year, one of my ex-wives passed away. I think it was wife number three. Or I'm not sure it was three or four. Whatever. Somewhere in there, one of my wives passed away. And that woman had given me four of my six children. And what's weird is I raised all my children by myself. You know the story of a woman gets pregnant, the guy leaves, he either gives her money or disappears, and he's an absentee dad, and blah, blah, blah. Well, I was the guy that had lots of kids, and the women left, which didn't help my self-esteem, for sure. They left, and they left me with the kids. So I raised all of my children by myself. And my sponsor's helping me realize that it's not a bragging thing. It's an okay thing that I'm a stand-up guy. I'm actually doing something that I'm supposed to do. I had these children. I'm supposed to take care of them. My 17-year-old, I ask her every day, have you heard from your mom? And she says, no. And I have mixed emotions. I go, good. You don't need to talk to her. And that's in my head. And then I say, gee, I'm sorry. That's what I tell her. I'm sorry. Hopefully she'll contact you and you'll get to talk to her. But my junkie side says, good. Whatever she gets, she deserves. You're a good kid. She doesn't deserve to have you in her life. But so I raised my children, and four of my kids struggled when their mom died, and our family is very, very disconnected at the moment. And so what do? I practice Narcotics Anonymous harder, because the answers are all in here. The answers aren't out in the street. They're not on the corner. They're not, I'm talking to my kids, there's no answers. But in Narcotics Anonymous, there's people I can talk to. When I tell this story, people go, hey, you know, my kid died. I can identify. Because people used to say, it's okay. I said, how could you say it's okay? Did your kid die? Not okay. It can get okay inside, but he's still gone. And I identify with the people who have lost children. And I'm really big on people who have kids, about people who take care of their kids, who people work with their kids, people who give them everything they can give based on what they learn and what they get through the program of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, we want a good life. We don't have to have things to have a good life. So for the past year plus, I've been sitting in my house. I have a couple of people that I trust that are cautious health-wise, and we go out to lunch. There's about five people that I will have lunch with. I won't go to in-person meetings because people do not do what they say they do. And that's typical of every, that's human nature. People say they wear masks, they don't wear masks. People get vaccinated, they lie about it. People get COVID, they go to meetings and don't tell anybody. I mean, this I know for fact. I'm not just saying this stuff. So I protect myself as best I can. And this year I have gotten a closer connection with my God and the program of Narcotics Anonymous. I write every day on the Just for Today. My sponsor asked me to do it. And when I share, I say, that damn guy, you know what he makes me do? He makes me write on the Just for Today. He gives me these stupid assignments. And when I talk to him, I said, why do you make me do this? And he says, Jimmy, I don't make you do it. I suggest it. Maybe put the Just for Today into your words and express how you feel about the thoughts of what the fellowship has gotten together and put in the Just for Today. So I've been writing on it for over a year, and I don't like it every day. And some days it flows and some days it doesn't flow, but I write every day. So I do that and I give it to people and I see people actually enjoying it. And I go, how could they enjoy it? I really don't enjoy this, you know? And I do step work. Every day I write on the steps. I highlight stuff. He says, all right, now we're gonna go to this step. We're gonna do this. Right now I just finished highlighting my 9th, 11th step in the textbook and it works how and why. And I used to highlight the whole page almost because I think it's just fabulous, the literature. And he said, Jimmy, I don't want you to do that. He said two things on each page. And if you read the literature and you could see so many things that are good, it's try and get it down to like two lines. I struggle every time I highlight to just have two of my favorite, most important things on each page. And I'm pretty good at it now. So I just finished the textbook and the It Works How and Why. And this past Tuesday, something came up with my daughter because my sponsor's in San Diego, California. And we meet every other Tuesday on the phone and we talk. And we spend two, sometimes 3 hours together going over my stuff. So the next time, I had something going on this week and it didn't work out. So we're going to go over it next time. But I never, ever am let down. When people talk about it, you know, you're never let down by the program. I'm never let down by this program. When I do the work, I feel good, even when I feel bad. Because there's times when I feel bad, but I feel good at the same time. It's okay to have things go wrong. It's okay to have your emotions all upset, but you can still feel good about life. And I'm not a guy who throws around the word gratitude. You wouldn't say, I'm a grateful recovering addict. I don't, my sponsor says, why don't you say that? I says, because, you know, I'm not a guy that uses the word gratitude. I have it around my house. I make sure I have little signs that say gratitude and things like that. And I keep them around to remind me and have somebody sends me their gratitude list at least three times a week. And I'm going to take it and put it in a book so I can read it every day. Because I'm not a guy, well, I'm grateful for this and I'm grateful for that. I have gratitude. And it talks about it, you know, in the Step Working Guide, it talks about it at the last question that a lot of people don't like to answer because they say it's not really part of the question part of the Step Working Guide. But it says, how will I express my gratitude today? And my gratitude is expressed in doing service, in talking about the program, about helping people. Somebody asked me, somebody heard me share at a meeting and asked me for my number and then asked me to sponsor them. And he's from India. And I struggle with people from other countries. I struggle with American language, let alone people from other countries. And people from India and Pakistan and stuff, I really struggle. And I said, okay, we can do something. And then he started to call me every day, and he calls me every day, and his language is wonderful, and I understand everything he says. And I've eliminated something in my brain that says I can't, it, like everybody's not included in the help I give. I have gratitude for the thoughts that I can help anybody that's willing to listen and willing to help me get this stuff out of me. Or anything that I've gotten in the past from other people comes out of me when people ask for help. Because I don't remember all the stuff that I know by myself. It's not all about my memory. It's all about, it's deep inside of me. But if you ask me a question, I pretty much have might have something to say about it. So I've been sponsoring this guy for 5 weeks now. He's halfway through his first step. He does the assignment I don't like, by the way. He does the writing on the Just for Today, and he's so thrilled to read it to me every day. And he has hope, and he has faith, and he shares about it. He was in a rehab with somebody 13 years ago, and that guy just celebrated 13 years. And the guy that I sponsor now has, he's getting close to 6 months. I don't know. He has 150 or 160 days, something like that. But he's doing it. And he says, I see what my friend saw 13 years ago. I'm seeing it today. And he's listening to people, and he's getting what he can out of the program. And it's really, really exciting to hear somebody so fired up. Because people do, they say, people will say, service keeps me clean. Well, service doesn't keep me clean, but service keeps me fired up, and the desire to search in Narcotics Anonymous for more stuff that I haven't uncovered, you know, to search for the things that I missed. We're human. We don't remember everything. We don't keep everything to the forefront. We don't pray about the same things. We don't lose the same things. We don't gain the same things. So I'm always fired up by service. That's why I like to do service. And this year, and I talked about it before, the message and what we get from after we, you know, we do the 12 steps. So it says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry the message to the addict who still suffers. Crying is a big thing. We don't, it actually says we don't even know if we can do it. But we're going to try. But we've got some ammunition. We've done the 12 steps. But the spiritual awakening part and what the message is, it didn't elude me. It just changes. And this year, like every other year, I said, I got it. I got it this year. This is the one. And I've read, anybody that's been around a long time and works this program, reads the literature a lot. I read the literature a lot because I'm always in service. I'm always looking up tradition stuff, concept stuff. I'm doing step work. I got like 15 people I sponsor, and I'm doing my step work. So I'm always in the literature. And there was something in the literature that I read in the textbook. Then I saw it in It Works How and Why, and it's worded kind of different, and it alludes to it in The Living Clean. And I never saw it before. That's why we have to keep doing this, because there's things. You know, when in the beginning, we always throw this word around. I passed over it with a minimum of concern. Well, guess what? We do that in everything we do every day. We just, it's not deliberate. It just happens because we're human. And I read something in the book, and it said, what we get out of the 12 step is, we get increased peace of mind and a genuine concern for others. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. I said, wow, all I have to do is take myself out of the picture, stop being so self-centered even when I think I'm not, put genuine concern for other people, not trying to patronize people, not trying to look good, not trying to pump my ego up, really be concerned about other people as opposed to being concerned solely about myself and what's going to happen to me and what can I get out of this. And that in itself will give me peace of mind. I have more peace of mind this year than I have in the 32 years prior. People are going out of their mind because they can't get to in-person meetings. And they don't like when I say it's not because you want to see your friends, because you want your friends to see you. You want them to see that you're okay. You want them to see that you're still the guy, you're still a girl, you know. And it may sound a little bad, but that's just what I believe, you know. I have opinions like everybody else, but I found out that being alone and getting okay was something that I never thought would happen. And I've been alone basically for a year. I think in the year I dated one woman for maybe 3 or 4 months, once a month, and it just didn't work out. It just didn't work out. And guess what? I'm not obsessed. I'm just okay, because I'm okay with me. Things like that don't crush me anymore. They used to crush me. And if I couldn't get the woman back, I'd be searching for another one. I need a substitute. It's like, if I can't get heroin, give me a Quaalude. You know? If I can't get cocaine, give me crack. We always want a substitute to make ourselves feel better. But if we practice this program and we do what it says, we don't need substitutes. The program and our God, our higher power, will keep us okay. And that's all we're looking for, is to be okay. I've never been so okay in my life, in my recovery, with my children. My children love me. I talked to three of my kids, the other kids today. I brought my daughter to work, and I called one of my daughters, and I called another daughter, and I called a son, and we talked, and they're, I love you, Dad. I love you, Dad. And they probably said it many years before, but I never heard it like I heard it this year. My connection with my higher power, and in through the program of Narcotics Anonymous, has gotten me to a place where I am truly okay today. And that's all I want to be, is okay today. Thanks for letting me share.